This podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who reminds you to learn more about the CA budget at the Behind CA's Budget blog, online at budget1314.blogspot.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Mark Thompson, Director of Downtown Redevelopment. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the stories making the news this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started?
The high school students are in the news this week.
My God, not just here.
Right.
They're all over the world.
It's viral. Viral, you know, viral video. I mean, you know, I tell you, everybody's got phones now with cameras, and boy, you know, anything gets recorded. And this was really, I mean, if you look at it, kind of a quick, it was 27 seconds.
It was a school fight.
It was a school fight. They've been going on since you and I were in high school. Well, at least since I was.
Me too.
But this one, you know, again, the kid happened to be quick with a camera, recorded the event, 27 seconds, and it was a love. An adult comes on the campus to attack a student, and the student cold clocks him. I mean, the guy dropped him. As Dave said, he must have had a glass jaw. I mean, he dropped him with one punch.
But you know what's interesting to me about this? First of all, the word viral. We might need to put that one aside for the 2012 word of the year, because remember last year we were struggling with the words
Occupy,
of the year?
Yeah, it was Occupy, right. Yeah.
Viral.
Viral.
But the story was the lead story on last night's Fox 10 o'clock news.
That's Fox for you.
It would have never been the lead story had it not gone viral the way it had.
Absolutely. That became
the story.
In and of itself. Yeah. And then I love today, of course, on the article. I first saw it on Explore Howard and David Gresham's article. But then Patch also ran an article. And when I last checked before I came over today, there were 81 comments on it. And of course, a lot of it, this is going back and forth between students saying Long Reach has a problem fights, and other students say, there are no fights in our school. It's a good school. That's just freshmen talking. I mean, it really was kind of funny. I mean, the comments are almost as entertaining as the video.
Look, hormones run high in high school and middle school.
You think?
People want to fight. They want to impress the girls. You know, it happens everywhere.
It does.
No matter what school you're at.
Always will and always has.
Absolutely. So we've talked about, speaking of schools, we've talked about the pension shift that is being looked at right now by the Maryland legislature. And, of course, the issue is that the state has historically picked up the cost of teacher pensions.
Yes.
And they can no longer afford to do much of anything. So they're looking everywhere to figure out a way to get rid of costs.
No, they're raising taxes and putting costs back on the county so the county can raise taxes, too.
Right. So, there was a big push by county executives and county legislatures to
led by our very own Ken Ullman.
Yes.
He was front and center on this.
Yes, he was. To try to keep the cost at the state level. And of course, it doesn't matter at the end of the day because it's all going to flow down to us
still,
one way or another.
It's still our money.
But the Senate did pass a gradual four-year phase-in of half the pensions cost. And that is now before the House of Delegates. So stay tuned.
Yeah, and I think probably one of the more, we talked to Calvin a little bit about this when he was on our show last time. One of the more disturbing things is part of the Senate bill gives the state unprecedented powers to kind of supersede county authority on raising taxes, because this all ties back to the maintenance of effort issue for schools. You know, if you don't maintain the same budget that you did the year before, then, you know, you can be fined violation. The state can actually step in and force you to raise taxes. You know, so it's a mess.
And admittedly, I don't know much about this. I need to look into it for the next show. But in this article that I read about this particular pension shift legislation, there was actually talk by the Senate of suggestions to the counties of ways they could recover some of the money that they're now going to have to pay for. And one of them was the indemnity mortgage recovery tax, which I guess must be some new tax that's being looked at.
Indemnity mortgage recovery tax.
This will allow the counties to tax land developers. Mark, you'll love the story.
I hate this. I hate it already.
When they take out a mortgage, to buy property. And I guess it'll be a special mortgage tax for builders and developers.
Oh, great.
And they're looking to raise up to $40 million next year by local governments to help fund this shift. So they come up with their own tax, and then they pass the cost on to the counties and say, here's a suggestion of a tax you might want to consider.
Yeah, you might want to try this.
You be the bad guy.
Unbelievable.
Howard County Board of Education is down to two prospects for replacing Dr. Sidney Cousins as superintendent.
Yeah, I just saw this. That was in the news yesterday. So, when's this meeting they're going to have?
Well, they're going to unveil the two candidates on Monday. And literally, I have this vision of like pulling off these big sheets saying, here they are.
Here they are.
Here they are, community. Go at them.
What do you think?
The big reveal.
The big reveal.
And somebody standing behind one. Let's hear it for this one.
And, of course, they're taking them on the show. They're going to have community forums, and they're going to introduce them and give them an opportunity to speak. And they hope to make a decision by the end of next week.
What a way to interview for a job, huh?
Can you imagine?
Oh, my God. You know, you wonder, you know, they say that the superintendents pay a lot of money. Well, to get the job is just, well, I mean, it's like a hell.
I think we should have had some charrettes around the whole topic of
We should have a charrette about that. That's great. Anyway, while we're on the subject of the schools, school board, the Explore Howard came out with their endorsements for the primary.
But that was a tough job.
Yeah, you know, it's, look, I mean, for the most part, I think everybody running, there's probably three that I think that would have been better off, you know, keeping their names at home, but I'm not going to name names. None of those three that I think shouldn't even be in the race are mentioned in the Explore Howard's endorsement. So
it kind of sounds like a game. All our listeners need to go home and figure out who's not named and who's Dennis talking about.
Who are these three? Well, you know what? And my mother taught me, if you can't say something good about somebody, don't say anything. So I'm not going to say anything.
I guess our show's over.
Really, that would take away a lot of the fun, wouldn't it? But in this case, I'm not going to say it. But I will say that, you know, that I give the Explore Howard lots of credit for doing this because it does help raise awareness of this race. But I do know that they have a history of the people that they endorse having a lousy record of getting elected. So, you know, I don't know how much these endorsements really do matter. But still, I like the fact that they shone a light on it. But more importantly was that they only one incumbent did they endorse. Ellen Flynn Giles, who has been on our show, and we love Ellen. I would like to see her reelected too. But the other two incumbents, Janet Siddiqui and Alan Dyer, did not get the nod. So,
and one of the two, I guess I can kind of understand.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. Another guest of our show. A very strange afternoon that was. But we got more election news. You do.
We do. So we've talked on a number of shows now about the redistricting lines. And that was obviously, you know, it kind of took on a life of its own. It was really a much bigger issue than it really should have been or probably warranted. However, the topic is the redistricting lines that were
drawn along partisan lines
by the commission, right?
A commission that held numerous public hearings.
The county council took it and said, no, we don't like any of the lines you've drawn. We're going to draw all of our own lines.
And, I think they're up like Plan Z.
And we've spoken with Courtney Watson about this, and we had Calvin Ball on, and we've spoken with him about it. And it came down to a very interesting vote.
Yes, on the Ides of March.
On the Ides of March. We had two Dems on one side, two Dems on the other, with Greg Fox being what's being called a tiebreaker vote, although probably not completely a fair characterization.
Right.
In any event, that's the map that passed.
Oh, the council. I'm sorry. The Ides of March was a different thing. Yeah, I had that wrong. Right. The council passed their thing before, but the Ides of March was the
I just ignored it because I didn't know what you were talking about.
Because you do that often with me, and I understand.
I
if I were you, I'd probably do the same. But March 15th, no matter what happened, if the county exec didn't approve it, approve the council's plan or whatever, what the commission recommended automatically
became law.
Yeah,
exactly.
Became law.
So, in fact, that is what happened because County Executive Allman decided not to act one way or another upon the passed legislation by the county council.
Right.
He let it lapse.
Let it lapse.
And by virtue of having it allowing it to lapse, the map that the commission adopted is, in fact, the one that became law.
And, you know, for the people that spent all – they volunteered their time, spent time on that commission, I think that was the proper outcome for that. And I will say it. We toot our own horn here. Toot, toot. We predicted that on this show when Calvin was on.
We did.
We said that was exactly what was going to happen.
And I only predicted it because you told me that I should predict it. So I thank you for that.
And that's one time you listened to me? I don't get it. I saw this story by Lindsay McPherson in Explore Howard about it was a good year for snow removal budgets. And you know, this is, it's not just the county snow removal budget, but we all, you know, a lot of people in this community live in live in communities governed by HOAs, you know, outside of the properties taken care of outside of the government. I mean, you have HOAs take care of snow removal in their communities and grass cutting, whatever.
Yeah, and private roads and sidewalks.
And a lot of them are going to be a little flush this year because they didn't have to spend the money they budgeted for snow removal.
Or less in the red.
Right. Less in the red. That being said, I mean, when I read this, I was thinking, I cut my grass for the first time this season last night.
And March 22nd. Yeah, can you believe that?
And I had to. I mean, I already delayed it long enough, but I mean, it was ridiculous. So that tells me, you know, having served as on an HOA board before, I know how this is. You know, when you sign a contract with a landscaping company, it usually has so many cuts that they'll give you during the season. I got a feeling they're going to get hit with more.
So whatever they saved on the snow budget, they're going to have to.
It might not be quite as much.
We'll pick it up on the lawn cutting.
And the other thing I heard on NPR the day, too, that mild winter that we've all been saying how great it was, we're going to see how bad it was when the bugs come out. Because apparently this mild winter means the bugs are going to be back in full
force. Never got cold enough to kill them off.
Never got cold enough to kill them off.
So we talked on previous shows about the inn at Perelina, a name that nobody on the show knows how to pronounce correctly.
St. Perelina.
And, you know, we've talked about whether it's appropriate or not for this inn, which is located on Route 108, just down the road from Ironbridge.
Just down the road from Ironbridge.
Whether it's appropriate or not for that to be sort of an inn or a sort of a small hotel.
Surrounded by residential community.
Exactly. So
the lady in her bathrobe in her backyard.
It's very funny.
Her pajamas.
Now pops out of the news the fact that the Masons, and I have to tell you which Masons, this would be the Harrod County-based Patmos Lodge of Ancient, Free, and Accepted Masons, in case...
opposed to the non-accepted Masons, which are...
In case you got that confused, correct. They are apparently looking to buy the parcel that is located, I believe, in between the inn at Perelina
and Ironbridge.
And there used to be an old white home, I think, there, and they're looking to tear that down, and they're looking to build a 5,800-square-foot lodge.
A lodge.
I'm confused, and maybe our guests can talk a little bit about this later. I know it's outside of Columbia.
But is that kind of a commercial use?
But I'm confused. Here we got Ironbridge. That's fine. And now we got the Masons. And I know it's a little bit different because fraternal organizations are an accepted conditional use in residential properties, and that's a little bit different from an inn. But it seems to me from a use perspective, how different is this really going to be?
And I don't know. I know some lodge. Maybe this group doesn't. But don't some lodge halls rent themselves out for functions? And, you know, won't you have that going on as well? And what I want to know, you know, part of the things we made fun of from the Perelina story, one of the neighbors complaining about it was a woman said she didn't feel comfortable walking out in her backyard in her pajamas anymore. I wonder how she'll feel with a bunch of Masons also, you know, as her next-door neighbors, you know.
I don't know, but I'm thinking I'm going to view that as a rhetorical question. I throw this back to you and ask you to tell us a little bit about our sponsor, the Columbia Association.
Again, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, for sponsoring our show again today. CA wants you to know about a new blog they have to help you understand how your CA lien dollars are spent a little bit better. CA's president, Phil Nelson, was a former city manager and understands the importance of people understanding their budgets. And to that end, he has established a blog called Behind CA's Budget. And it's not just a dry blog. It got like 18 videos with CA staff explaining how your money is spent. You can find the blog at budget1314.blogspot.com. But I think there's probably a link you can find through either CA's Facebook page or on their webpage at ColumbiaAssociation.com.
All right. Now let's introduce Mark, our guest. Mark, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This
is great. As I alluded to earlier, Mark is the Director of Downtown Redevelopment. Now, I find your title curious because it kind of leads to, well, what downtown? Well, is this downtown D.C.? Is this downtown?
Downtown Columbia.
Columbia.
Town center is off.
You've got to change that. And I know
This is part.
We're not, this is downtown.
We're not calling it town center anymore.
That's right. We're not.
Really? So this part
it's
of your...
downtown. We'll say town center. Where's that?
Everybody knows where downtown is.
Is there any friction between that approach and Ellicott City, you know, for sort of the people that have been around this county for longer? I mean, that is viewed by some as sort of downtown.
Well, Main Street.
Main Street, absolutely.
Yeah, we call that Main Street.
Yeah.
As an Ellicott Cityite,
okay.
That's Main Street.
Okay.
Well, or the historic district.
Yeah, absolutely, the historic district, and I think that's...
Or the hysteric district, which is, you know,
hysterical,
on Friday nights. Yeah.
Sure.
And maybe it's the fact that, you know, Columbia's population now in this article that we found is poised to hit 100,000 people.
Finally.
In the
Finally,
next
that's right.
year
Did you see
so.
That article?
I just saw it. I'm just looking at it.
So what's fascinating at this story is that Jim Rouse, and I'm very familiar with his vision... predicted,
you wore glasses, right?
predicted in 1963 that Howard County would have 100,000 residents by 1980. Mm-hmm. So we're 32 years later than what he anticipated, and yet we've seen a lot of growth outside of Columbia in the western rural section of Howard County.
Yeah, or Elk Ridge, even, you know.
Yeah, and in Elk Ridge, it's curious.
You know, what Rouse couldn't have predicted was the real estate, you know, cycles that we've gone through. I mean, I think the first one to hit was in the 70s, and then we hit another one in the 80s. So, yeah, the pace has been slowed down, but in effect, it is... It's going to be more than 100,000 by the time he's done, if you do your job correctly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
and therein lies how we will call this downtown Columbia, right?
That's right. That's right. We're looking for a much more urbanized character to Columbia. And I think with the plan that was developed over a number of years and had a lot of community input, I'm really excited to have the opportunity to play a role in it because we've got some fantastic stuff already happening.
Well, let's I'm sorry.
So I was going to say, before we get too far with stories and what Mark is working on.
About him.
Yeah.
That's right.
A little bit about Mark.
So you
obviously are a Rouse guy.
I am.
Actually, you started with Ryland, correct?
I started my career in Howard County in 1992 with Ryland Homes.
Wow.
So it was my first job out of graduate school was in beautiful Columbia.
What were you doing for Ryland?
I worked in their corporate marketing group.
Okay.
We set up the Ryland Home Stores, which were...
So you worked for Chad Dreyer back then?
I did. Yeah. Well, I worked for Roger Shipke and Chad Dreyer.
Oh, yeah.
And then I realized that... when Mr. Dreyer came in, it was pretty evident that things were going to move west, back to my homeland of California.
Yeah, he couldn't wait to get back out there.
That's right. So after Ryland Homes, I spent some time at Legg Mason Realty Group, the old real estate consulting firm of Legg Mason, and had a great experience there. And then in 1998, joined the Rouse Company.
So you joined it when it was still Rouse.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Because then you made the transition to GGP as well.
With the merger, I stayed with the new company and was with GGP until about end of 2008.
And I like to tell the story. You know, Mark, poor Mark, you know, you engineered probably one of the largest land sales for GGP since they had acquired the Rouse Company. I mean, that has to be on the books.
Oh, yeah.
One of the largest lands. He sold the Emerson Corporate Development Project. First of all, mm-hmm. sold us a property, but then you ended up selling the whole park.
Right.
To the Knott. Yeah,
yep.
William Knott.
James F. Knott.
James F.
Realty
Knott, I'm sorry. Group. James F. Knott Realty Group. And after that, you sold yourself out of a job.
Yeah, you could say that.
He's a team player.
That's right. I mean, took the hit for the team.
Yeah, you did. I mean, you know, and remember Greg Hamm.
Sure.
You know, he was leading the charge for General Growth locally back then. Greg even tells the story that Mark's land sale helped them help the whole company nationwide make payroll that month.
Well,
is that correct?
I don't know if it was that big, but it was a big sale, and I was very proud of it. It was great working with the Knotts on that. It was a crazy time.
It was like
that was
fantastic job, Mark. Fired.
Yeah.
See ya.
Well, that was after
talk about not being able to live up to what they expect.
That was after a phone call, maybe a couple a day from Chicago, saying, "You sold anything yet? You sold anything yet? But don't sell it for too cheap. We need the money."
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
I gotcha.
My God.
So. All right. So then you moved into this new position.
Well, actually, I had my
started my own
Real Insight, which was a commercial brokerage and advisory firm. I did that since 2008, and that was great. I was always a big company guy and never had thoughts of being in my own business, but in 2009 there weren't a lot of other opportunities.
Yeah, yeah.
Timing wasn't great.
Right, but right. Actually, I had some great opportunities and worked with some great people. So in the end, it really was a pretty good experience.
And I know one of the things you worked on when you were on your own was that the old WCI tower site. Didn't you have some clients that that were kind of sniffing around that?
Yeah, we did. We did. I did. I took, there was a couple of clients that looked at that. And
now this week we hear it's sold for what do you think of the price? $3.5 million for 1.14 acres in town center.
I think that's a great price. I mean, I think that there, what I was mentioning earlier, there's all kinds of things that are very exciting about what's going on downtown, and that was one of them. I mean, that, I think, you know, in real estate, as you guys know, having a comparable, having a value, setting a level of pricing is critical.
Sure.
And until you do that, everybody's uncertain, and nobody wants to take the one to take that first step. That's a phenomenal price.
I know. I talked to some folks over at Howard Hughes, and they were pretty pleased to hear that closed and at that number.
Yeah, and especially, you know, given the fact that it's taken such a long time to get that.
It validates the whole town center redevelopment. I think, you know, it says
downtown redevelopment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're going to keep correcting me.
I'm going to charge you a buck every time you say that other word.
You probably have a lifetime of correcting people on that because it's not easy to turn that ship around.
Believe me, it's not easy for me.
Was that your idea to start naming a town?
Oh, no.
No.
That was way before me. That's another thing I inherited.
That came with the job.
Right.
So after your position with your own company, after you did that, then you decided to take this new position that was created by County Executive Allman.
Right.
And was really a position to sort of coordinate the government's involvement and efforts in downtown redevelopment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a great position for me because there are so many departments and agencies involved in this project. I mean, it's an incredibly complicated real estate project. And, you know, to have the ability and the challenge, honestly, to work across the different departments at the county and make sure that we're all working towards that same goal of coming up with making this great plan reality. It's been a lot of fun so far. And I got to tell you, I think I'm ending like my seventh week. And it's been a fantastic experience. You know, the county, my colleagues there have been very welcoming, and I hit the ground running, that's for sure.
Now, you report directly to the exec, correct?
Jessica Feldmark is his chief of staff.
But also kind of with Marcia, too, or?
Well, I work, actually, my office is in Department of Planning and Zoning.
Right.
So we work together. I'm with Department of Planning and Zoning folks all day long on this one. But I am part of the administration's office.
You know, some of the critics have said this is just, you know, Ken Allman creating a new high-paid job and, you know, kind of building his own kind of fiefdom. But there's a real justification for this in an age where there isn't one single developer in town center or downtown anymore.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, in the old days when the mall and all the land was owned by just first Rouse Company and then General Growth, it was easier.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
now you have a lot of players.
Oh, there's absolutely. And I think a lot of people don't realize that it's not just Howard Hughes. It's General Growth Properties. You know, the property, all of the parking lots surrounding the mall.
Sears.
Sears owns its own parking lot. Sears is a, you know, potential development partner.
Yeah, they're in real estate
and
now.
And they are in real estate, and it's probably a better place for them sometimes, days.
Yeah.
But they have, you know, they have a big holding here. And then the Columbia Association as well. The Lakefront and Symphony Woods are going to be fabulous opportunities for good things to come. So,
Mark, is this a position that you think a jurisdiction should have irrespective of the downtown unique quality that we have here in Howard County? I mean, take Route 1, okay? You've got different owners, you've got fairly consistent zones across Route 1, yet they are some differing as you go down north and south. Is this a position that really we've needed all along and Columbia Downtown Redevelopment has now provided the impetus to do it?
Well, I think that's a great question. I mean, this position actually, there's a number of my types throughout the area. Montgomery County had a similar position with the Silver Spring redevelopment.
That's gone now, or they still have it?
Well, that person who was, when they were really in the full throes of the Silver Spring redevelopment,
okay.
They've moved on, I think, to another project.
Okay.
But I met a woman in Fairfax County who whenever I think I've got a tough job, she's for Fairfax County in charge of Tyson's Corner redevelopment.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so, we got Metro going through there.
We got Metro. They have 17 projects in for approvals. So, but to your point,
it's a mess,
Paul,
over there, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think this type of position for a major redevelopment of the scale of downtown is essential to make sure that all the moving pieces are put together. The Route 1 corridor, I mean, you know, there's fantastic opportunities there. I think some of the challenges there is, to your what you were saying, there's different pieces and different players, and whether or not that could be the focus of a position like this in the future,
right.
You know, it could be.
Well, and the economy definitely took its toll on Route 1 redevelopment. I mean, I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, with Blue Stream Overlook and Howard Square, and, you know, there's some exciting things happening over there as well.
Yeah.
There are. It is finally happening. Blue Stream, after, 20 years of planning, or maybe even longer, finally is coming online.
So some investments being made in...
I was just going to talk about that. Yeah, we talked a little bit about WCI's purchase, but also there was a note in the paper yesterday by an article by Jamie Smith Hopkins in The Sun about General Growth putting almost $2 million into their 7 office buildings that surround the mall.
That's right.
That's huge.
That is.
It's overdue.
It is. It's way overdue. And I think, again, it's a testament to... We've gotten this plan set up. We're beginning an era of certainty that, you know, things are happening in downtown, and General Growth, you know, is realizing, hey, these can be some very strong performing assets, but like every real estate asset, you have to put money back into it.
Well, you do, and as somebody who has represented tenants who's looked at spaces around here, I mean, these buildings need something. They, you know, a lot of the action of Columbia, as far as the nice space, was all happening around downtown. It was happening out in Gateway, the nicer mm-hmm. buildings. And so these are buildings, I mean, there hasn't been a new building built in Town Center since the 90s?
The old Ryland building?
The old Ryland
building, actually the building over on the lake where you guys are.
Paul's building? Is yours newer than the Ryland building?
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the last building.
And that was 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah, at least.
So let me ask you this, both of you in real estate. So just under $2 million over 7 buildings. Is that really...
It's not a lot.
That doesn't sound like that much money to me.
It's not a lot, but it's significant to me in a couple of ways. First of all, not every building needs as much as the others. So it's not like it'll be, 7 divided by 1.8 million. Some will get more than others.
All right, so let's say the biggest one gets $500,000.
So you can do
it
a lot.
It sounds like lip service to me. I mean, is that meaningful money?
Developers spend all their monies in the lobbies and the bathrooms.
That's absolutely right. The tenants, when they go in to their space, they're going to get tenant improvements built in when they build a new space. For an office building, if you're not going to do something to the skin of the building, so to speak, which you really
if you have a
can.
Structural issue.
Yeah, you do it then, but you're looking at the lobbies and the bathrooms and the entryways.
Yeah, the common corridors. You think about it, there's not a lot of space in the building, compared to what the tenants occupy. So, I think you'll see some significant changes with it.
Well, and the important thing, it's like somebody's house. You paint the house. It doesn't necessarily cost you a lot of money, but all of a sudden, wow.
You change the landscape.
Painted a bathroom last week. Paint's gone up like gas has. It's like $42 for a gallon.
Did you paint the bathroom?
I did.
You did.
He's proud of himself too.
Bathrooms are hard.
Talking about it for years. Everything's painted except bathrooms in my house. I hate them.
Oh, yeah. Well, bathrooms are hard to paint.
Sorry, I digress.
I'm impressed that you paint. I mean, that bathroom is kind of thing you hire somebody to do because they're kind of a pain in the butt.
All right, so Mark, one of the
pun intended.
Big responsibilities you have, and I think it's probably one of your biggest challenges, is to guide developers through this 16-point plan that was adopted
16 steps.
For Columbia redevelopment.
Right, right. It's the famous 16 steps. You know,
sounds like a dance.
I know. Boom, boom.
Well, we're good sometimes.
You guys are. That was a good setup. I gave you a nice, fat, slow one.
You did. The 16-step downtown dance.
I'm sure that's what some people feel, and they probably feel like their feet have gotten stepped on a number of times.
I bet. I don't think anybody's happy with it.
No. And you know, part of this, it's interesting because, you know, throughout the process, as this plan was developed, you know, much of the response was, we need more input. We need more community input. And that, in essence,
is what this is.
I mean,
community input on steroids. Yeah,
it is. You know, and that's fine. I think where there's been some frustrations, both I know with developers and with the community and within the county itself, is what are the expectations? What are those different steps? What do they mean? And especially for the community, you know, Howard Hughes and General Growth have submitted their final development plans. They went out to the community, they showed those, and people sort of said, "Where's the beef?
Yeah, where's the detail?
You know, where's the detail? What color is this building?
Keep dancing. Yeah. You'll see it later.
Yeah, exactly. Stay with us. The music hasn't stopped.
That's true.
It's a very long song, but the reality is that. At each step, it is a very well-organized breakdown of the development process. And that's one that we hope, and I know, you know, I've had discussions with Marcia McLaughlin, the director of Department of Planning and Zoning. We're really looking hard at the process internally for us to be able to be as efficient.
Maybe tweak it a little bit.
Well, yeah, and just make sure we're doing the best we can to get through these things, but also setting the expectations with developers and with the community so that people know what they're getting into.
You know, it's funny you say that. I often tell people that as a commercial real estate broker, a lot of my job is managing expectations.
Absolutely.
And that's really your role, is to begin to, because you're the guy who is the nonpartisan player in this. I mean, you know, your stake is the people.
Right.
You're a representative of the county. And so that's, your job will be to manage expectations both from the private and the public sectors.
Absolutely.
Are you being painted to the public, the developers, as sort of now the face of county government when it comes to, are you sort of a gatekeeper to the county executive? Would that be a fair characterization saw you that way?
I wouldn't call myself a gatekeeper. He's got much better people than me.
Yeah, from a development perspective.
Now you're one of his people, though.
Yeah, no, I am, absolutely. But I'm just saying, there's... I think that part of, again, what my role will be to play is that point of contact. You know, and what I'm doing right now is learning as much as I can about all of the different pieces within the county and quite honestly outside of the county that are going to be impacted. And with that, then I can help people through that process. So from that standpoint, I'm going to be the point of contact.
I mean, you've got a housing trust thing to set up, right? I mean,
we've
already been seeded with some money, correct?
No, it hasn't yet. But
okay.
That's, you know, one of the things that we're putting together right now is working with Howard Hughes on setting up some implementation language to create what's going to be called the Downtown Columbia Partnership.
Okay.
And there are many areas, and there's many of these types of organizations across the country, over a thousand of them.
Baltimore has one.
Baltimore, exactly. Yeah. The Downtown Partnership in Baltimore. And essentially, we're going to create an organization for Downtown Columbia that will be responsible. It'll have a board made up of members of the community and Howard Hughes and GGP. And it'll be responsible for marketing downtown. It'll be responsible for higher levels of maintenance of some of the common areas in downtown. It'll be responsible for working with the Columbia Association and a lot of, you know, many of the things to make downtown really work and be as exciting and effective as possible.
Okay.
So,
Mark, I think we've joked around about the charrette, which was feels like ages ago. People want to see something.
Yeah,
so if
yeah.
you could walk me through years 1 through 5 from today.
Well, I was even going to ask them to do sooner. I mean,
okay, you know, so 6 months, a year, and then
what are we going to see this
what
year?
What am I going to see before the end of this year? And then what am I going to see by December 31st of every year for the next 5 years? I mean, what do you envision? I know some of it is probably speculation, but some of it is in the pipeline already.
You sound like my boss.
No one's ever told me I sound like Ken. Now, you might be talking about Jessica.
Well, yeah, but you know what? You're not wearing a tie today, and Ken doesn't wear a tie anymore.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, that's not true. He does some days.
He wants to make sure he gets his paycheck.
Exactly.
That's right. Today is payday, by the way. No, I think that's a great question, because part of that is this whole expectation setting. You know, I mean, we are all very anxious to see some things happening, and happening quick.
Well, you actually have them. I mean, there are.
Oh yeah, there's things happening. That's the other thing I'm really excited about. Is, you know, we're very fortunate here. This is a redevelopment, and redevelopments typically are plans that are done, and then you sit there and
wait. They go very slow.
And you say, okay, come on, we just need one. We just need one to get it started and kicked off.
Right.
Well, we have three that are in the gate already, so to speak. Three different projects, all very exciting.
Can we run through those real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. The first project is with Howard Hughes.
Yeah, that's the 817.
817 residential units. It's called part of the Warfield neighborhood.
Okay.
They are in with their final development plan, and they've submitted as a part of that design guidelines and a whole number of other things. They will be, you know, they're working through that process. They've partnered with Kettler, which is a very, very strong...
And a local developer, Orchard Development.
Right.
Earl Arminger.
And Earl Arminger, exactly, for the first phase of that.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, they're moving, and we are all moving as quickly as we can to get that going. The second project is with the Columbia Association, with Symphony Woods.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
So that is in. They are as well, have submitted their final development plans.
For the fountain.
Well, for the fountain and for a lot more in Symphony Woods.
Right.
And that's pretty exciting, because there's also work being done looking at the longer-term improvements for Merriweather Post.
I was going to say, that's part of that too, right?
That's all part of it. And, you know, to really be a real downtown, we are going to have just a phenomenal community recreation facility between Merriweather and Symphony Woods, and that's going to be that is really going to set us apart. So that's going through as well, and there'll be more planning, obviously, to do with these things. But
then the third one is
the third is General Growth Properties,
right here in the mall,
right here where we're sitting, not too far away. They will be. They've submitted a plan to, in essence, it's about 75,000 square feet of new retail in the L.L. Bean, where the L.L. Bean area is around there. So that's gonna create some additional community space that is going to, you know, add to the existing street space, streetscape around in that area of the mall as well. So those three things, and then you add on, you know, $1.8 million in renovations to the existing office space, throw in a land sale.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a pretty exciting week for me.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, I'm...
So of these three projects, did you kind of lay them out in the order in which they were submitted, or in the order in which you expect them to kind of pop out of the ground?
To physically when we're going to see things. Yeah.
No order.
Okay.
I think probably...
when they will manifest themselves.
Howard Hughes is probably, in terms of the process, the farthest one along.
Okay.
You know, between and Symphony Woods and the GGP, those are all going to be running very close.
So since we've been referring to this as a dance, a 16-step dance,
mm-hmm.
where in the 16-step dance
are those
would
three,
you put yeah. these three projects?
They are in the first quarter, so to speak.
Okay.
they're going to be, their plans will be going before each of the three entities. Their plans will be going before the planning board, which will then approve what we call their final development plans. When their final development plans are, and as well a neighborhood concept plan.
Now, before you go too far, a lot of people misunderstand. Final development plans don't show you any designs.
This is true.
They just show footprints, correct?
Right. They don't even show footprints. Really, they're a land use plan.
Okay.
And in the old days, the Rouse Company would do an FDP, as they're commonly called, a final development plan, and it was just lines on a piece of paper. Right. This is going to be retail. This is going to be employment. This is going to be residential. Well, we've gotten more detail to that.
Okay.
So that's the first piece. People need to know the final development plan of today versus 10 years ago is very different.
Okay.
So there's more detail. There's street alignments, bicycle path, pedestrian path alignments, those types of things, and what type of land uses there's going to be. They then, so the planning board will review those and subsequently approve them after any comments or tweaks here or there. Then they move to a site development plan. And a site development plan is going to be focused on one specific project.
Right.
So the apartment building that Kettler will be doing with Orchard.
So back to my original question.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, takes care of this show.
What was that?
Now, so when will we see something?
When will ground be broken?
I'm hoping we see ground broken in
the summer?
2013.
On the residential or on all of them?
Yeah, on the residential.
Okay.
Nothing this summer. Nothing
I don't think there'll be anything this summer. That would be...
That'd be aggressive.
That'd be very aggressive. Typically, it takes about 6 months to process a site development plan. So...
Worry some about that when you're when we're talking about the time it takes, the missing the market? I mean, right now there is a market for multifamily housing, and will it still be there 8 months from now when they break ground? I mean, is that a concern?
I don't know. We're going to have a double dip recession. Who knows?
Thank you, Paul. That was my answer.
Okay.
Is it going to rain tomorrow?
Yes,
it is.
As a matter of fact, it is. Yeah.
I think. I think that timing right is everything. And in this case, though, we've got a great area. Howard County is a phenomenal place to be. And we've got some existing assets of downtown that are just great strengths. The lakefront, Merriweather Post, a phenomenal performing shopping center that we're sitting in. And that's going to bode well for us. Despite whatever economic conditions,
so the fundamentals are strong.
Yeah,
enough
the
that
fundamentals
we should be
able to, are going to be really great for us going through.
So we're kind of up against the clock here. So I want to thank you for coming, but want to give you one last opportunity to tell us something that you thought we'd ask, or you wanted to tell us that we didn't ask, if anything.
Oh my gosh, that's a tough one with you two guys. Well, I'm just again very excited. I think that you guys have done.
He's not going to tell us.
Well, I can't tell you everything.
He could, but it'll be our last show.
That's right.
And his as well.
That's right. Yeah, definitely mine. No, I appreciate the chance to sit down with you guys. A lot of fun.
Well, we thank you for coming by, and we look forward to seeing the outcome of your efforts.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
I think it's great to have you on board with this, and I think it'll only help downtown.
There you go.
Moving forward.
Thank you.
And we should stop there before Dennis goes back to something other than downtown.
Right.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on April 10th with another 40 minutes of news and commentary. We hope you'll join us.